In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Ooh. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back into the Sports Hour. It's great to be here. It's the first podcast of November, Mitch. The year continues to fly by. We are recording this on Wednesday, November 2nd.
It is Wednesday, my dudes.
It is Wednesday, my dudes. It was the first snow here in the Salt Lake Valley today, Mitch. A light dusting on and off throughout the day. Not much stuck around, but it was fun to see it fall. It's officially that time of year here. So we're all bundled up. We got candles lit. We got blankets being used. It's that time of year here in the Graf household, I guess. You're probably still 100 degrees, right? I mean, is that what California is at?
The high today was 56. So
nice and brisk. Okay.
We're at a brisk time of the year now. We've turned the corner. We've turned the corner. Yes. Thank God.
Yes. Yeah, we have. It is a busy time on the sports calendar, as you already know. We've got a jam-packed podcast today. NFL trade deadline came and went on Tuesday this week, and we had the busiest trade deadline final day in NFL history. The most transactions to go down on the final day of the trade deadline. So we'll get into all of that, as well as the college football playoff rankings. The first edition of the college football playoff rankings top 25 came out on Tuesday as well. We'll get into that on the campus tour. World Series going on right now between the Phillies and the Astros. We got that. And I mean, not to mention maybe the highlight of the show, the thing I'm most excited to talk about, one of the craziest moves in NASCAR you'll ever see. I mean, Mitch, we got a lot to talk about today.
We got a ton to talk about. You ready to jump right into it?
Absolutely. Let's not waste any more time. Get us in here with the news.
Let's get into the news and notes around the world of sports. Let's get into the news!
Alrighty, Mitch, let us start in the news. We're going to save the NFL stuff for the back half of the podcast because, again, there was a lot of transactions to talk about on the trade deadline. So we're going to save that for the back half of the podcast. So we will focus and start our news in the NBA with surprising news. I think that's fair to say. Pretty surprising news. Steve Nash, the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, been fired after, just 6 or 8 games into this season. 8 games. 2-6 start for the Nets, and they have mutually parted ways, they said. That's the biggest bullshit I've ever heard in my life. Because Steve Nash decided to get into the season. I think it's better for us all if I just am done doing my job. Like,
isn't that the dumbest thing ever, though, too? Like, hey, Steve Nash, you're fired. I agree. Like, come on. Like, that's not mutual. Like, that's so stupid the way they worded that. They mutually parted ways, but he was fired. I don't get that.
Yeah. So, Steve Nash out of there. Listen, first time head coach, he was brought in to get the most out of what was at the time, James Harden and Kevin Durant and Kyrie, right? James Harden then moves on. Now it's Kyrie and KD. It's not been good under Steve Nash, but I think he is clearly the scapegoat here for this failure in Brooklyn. And he is just one of the many head coaches that they've let go as a scapegoat in the midst of this thing that has just this experiment that has just simply not worked. And to add to the suspicion and the drama and the like, what are we doing here? The Nets have their eyes set on their next head coach, and it is the currently suspended head coach of the Boston Celtics, Ime Udoka. Yes, the Nets have reportedly, they're pretty close on a deal to bring in Udoka as the new head coach. A formal agreement is expected soon. This is according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. This was reported yesterday on November 1st, but Ime Udoka currently suspended from Boston, as we have discussed here on the podcast previously. He's under contract with the Celtics, so there'd have to be agreement made. There's no requirement that Boston could ask for anything in return, but they certainly could ask for draft capital in return for giving up a head coach under contract, which, considering he'd be going to the Nets, I think is pretty likely. There's also no clear timeline as like when he would start, because Ime Udoka is not suspended by the league. He's suspended by the Celtics, right? So if he goes to the Nets, in theory, his suspension doesn't hold any weight in Brooklyn. They could just, you know, clear him if they wanted. Now, would the NBA step in and bar that? Are we talking this season, mid-season, like next week, like next season? There's still a lot to be had here, but certainly an interesting flurry of moves here for Brooklyn. This early into the season, very surprising, Mitch.
Yeah, lots of movement and pretty significant movement, you know, but the Brooklyn Nets, the Ime Udoka thing just adds a completely another weird twist to it. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Like you said, I'm sure Boston's going to get some sort of compensation if they do let him go to Brooklyn. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this the rest of this timeline plays out if we see Udoka back on the bench coaching a team this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something to monitor. Now, obviously, Udoka has a lot of ties with the Brooklyn Nets organization. He was an assistant coach under Steve Nash during the 2020-2021 season. He obviously worked with Sean Marks, dating back to the San Antonio Spurs day. That's their GM. So there's a lot of ties. It makes sense, I guess, if you're bringing someone in midseason who's already familiar more or less with what you have. Now, he was a head coach somewhere else last year, but still, I guess it sort of makes sense. But yeah, I'm very interested with you what the timeline looks like when he's being brought in. I just think ultimately, like, this isn't going to make that much of a difference. Like, the flaws in this Brooklyn team is not the head coach. They're not a head coach away, Mitch. They are so much more away. They are a getting rid of a cancerous Kyrie Irving. They are a actually developing a good deep roster and a good rotation and a good front office away from contending, not simply a head coach.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the most interesting part to me here is, like you said, they have all the flaws within the roster. And yet the first thing they do is they go basically fire the guy that was still winning with that team, you know, through all the flaws that this roster had. So, like, it seems a little silly. I guess, you know, they're expecting Steve Nash to just take all the broken pieces and make a beautiful picture out of it and go win a chip with it. And that's tough to do when you have that much conflict inside an organization. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll see what if it is Ime Udoka, we'll see what luck he has there in Brooklyn. But yeah, certainly an interesting situation. Mitch, let's go to the MLB with the World Series going on right now. In fact, game four just got underway as we are recording this. So we won't have a score there for you probably by the time we finish. But we will, I guess, be able to see and monitor how that game is going. But we're three games through this October Classic, Mitch. Phillies lead the series 2-1. Philadelphia got the win in game one in Houston. Extra inning game. JT Realmuto hits a home run in the 10th to, you know, sort of get the comeback and earn that key road win in game one. Astros come back, win game two, 5-2. Last night's game, game three, after a rain delay the previous night, rain delayed on Halloween, played last night. Phillies win 7-0. Just bombs, five home runs, I think, in the game for the Phillies. They lit up McCullers and Here we go. I mean, the Phillies lead 2-1, and Mitch, they've got two games at home. They've got two more games in Philly before they got to make the trip back to Houston. And I mean, they get it done here. They don't have to make the trip back to Houston. They can stay in Philly and celebrate if they could get it done here. And I think that's what's so impressive about what the Phillies have done so far is they put themselves in the position, the power position. They've backed the Astros against the wall, and you got two home games right here. You know, you can end it. You don't even have to go back to Houston. Man, impressive to see what the Phillies have pulled off this postseason.
Extremely impressive. And you know what? This is the part that I really love. Game three last night, Bryce Harper takes Lance McCullers deep. Instantly, he's back in the dugout, and he's yelling for Alec Baum to come over to him. Bomber, Bomber, come over here. And they're whistling at him. He finally comes over, and he whispers in his ear, he's tipping all his pitches. He's tipping all his pitches. And you know what? That if you're going to try to find a little advantage, hey, Houston, take notes. That's how you do it. You don't do it by wiretapping, okay?
Right.
You don't do it by video surveillance. That's how you do it. That's old school figuring out how to get ahead of a pitcher right there.
Yep.
Finding how he tips his pitches. If you actually look at the side-by-side video, it's incredible how much he was. Difference between his fastball and his breaking ball, where it's like night and day.
Yeah, I watched the TikTok on it today. Mm-hmm. And there was a clear, distinct difference of when he was throwing the fastball, it looked like this. And when he was throwing a breaking ball, it looked like this. And you could tell. So, I mean, that was an obvious thing. And, I mean, clearly he gave up 7 runs last night in that loss. So, I mean, clearly the Phillies had him figured out and they've put themselves in that power position. Mitch, now as we head into game 4 and the rest of this series, we both picked the Phillies to win the World Series. You picked them in 7. I picked them in 6. Are you still feeling confident there heading into game 4? You know, Astros backs against the wall here in game 4, right? Because if you go down 3-1, that's a really tough spot to put yourself in and have to win 3 games to win a World Series. So backs against the wall tonight for Houston. But how are you feeling? Still rolling with the Phillies? Still feeling confident in that pick?
I am. I'm still feeling confident in the Phillies. I don't know if I feel confident in 7, though, anymore. But I'll tell you what. If Philly wins tonight, that's ball game. That's it. They win in 5.
It feels like it. Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like it.
This feels like a team. We talked about how scrappy they are and how much fight this team has. This also feels like a team, though, that when they got the foot on the neck, they stepped down. And they finished the job right there. So if they win tonight, man, I think the series is over. I think it's done in 5.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mitch. And listen, the Philly bats have showed up in the postseason. That's what's got them to this point, led by Bryce Harper, who's just playing at an all-time level. This postseason run that he's having here in 2022 is all-time special, what he's putting on for this team. And it's a huge reason why they are in this situation. And I'm just not going to bet against those guys. The way that they're playing, the way that they're hitting the ball, the confidence that they have, the swagger about them, just feels like it's the year for the Phillies. We'll see how the rest of the series plays out again. Game 4 tonight. We're recording this on November 2nd. So by the time we would come back next week with a podcast, the World Series will be wrapped up. We'll have our champ, and looking forward to see how the rest of this series plays out.
Great time to be a Philadelphia sports fan right now. I mean, it's a great time.
Really, Eagles undefeated, Phillies are winning. I did see this thing. I think you sent it to me, right, on TikTok, that every time the Phillies have won a World Series, the financial markets have, like, crashed. So,
a Philadelphia team, yes.
Yes, right, because it was the A's, the Philadelphia Athletics at one point. But, yes, the Philadelphia baseball team, every time they've won a World Series, the financial markets have crashed. So maybe it's not a good time for the Phillies to win a World Series. Maybe we could put this off a little bit. I don't know.
Economy's already in the shitter. That wouldn't be their fault.
We'll take it over. We'll take it over at Astros World Series. I'll take financial crisis.
Probably.
over giving them another ring. Mitch, at NASCAR update to wrap up the news. A crazy week in Martinsville. The championship on the line, and I'm sure you guys have seen it if you're listening to the podcast. One of the most incredible moments I think I've ever seen, in a NASCAR race. Break it down for the folks what happened last week at Martinsville.
Martinsville, this is the final cutoff race. There are no more cutoffs. This determines who the championship four is. Ross Chastain is 2 points behind Denny Hamlin and five cars behind Denny Hamlin going into the final corner on the last lap. And he needs to pass some cars. It certainly looks like he's well out of range and not going to get it done. Went out of nowhere. Going into turn three. Chastain drops the hammer. Let's go of the wheel. Rim rides around the wall. Wide open. Clears about four or five cars, including Hamlin. Noses him out on the line and gets into the championship four by 1 point. I don't know if I could use words to really justify how incredible this move was. If you haven't seen it yet, pause the podcast and go watch it. Because I'll tell you what, it is the greatest, it's the greatest move I've ever seen. I've never seen a move made in racing like that ever. And I don't know if we'll ever see it again. I'm not sure if we'll ever see it again. I can totally see NASCAR saying, okay, that was fun. That was great. Don't do it again. Like that's the one time we've seen it. It was awesome. Now don't do it again. Some really odd opinions on that. Kyle Larson called it embarrassing when he himself tried to do it earlier this year at Darlington. We saw Carl Edwards try to do it like 11 years ago in a video game move, dive bomb Jimmy Johnson. He couldn't make it stick though. He went right back up to the wall and obviously killed his shot to win. But like, this isn't out of the norm. Every so often we do see someone try to pull off a quote unquote video game move. We just hadn't seen it work yet. And now that we've seen it work and we go, holy shit, when it works, it's unbeatable. It's an unbeatable move. Like there's going to be, NASCAR is going to put something in place that probably prevents this from happening on a week in, week out basis. And honestly, at first I was like, oh, come on, that's not fun. Like, let it happen. But in reality, yeah, you probably should do something because then it loses its luster. Like a move like that loses its, you know, its genuineness. Like that's a once in a lifetime, move. So incredible move by Ross Chastain. Like I said, if you haven't seen it already, it's all over social media still. Go check it out. Go watch it. It's something you have never seen and probably never will see in NASCAR again. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I was texting with my dad about it, and I think I said to him, it feels like something you would have seen Ricky Bobby try to pull off. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're talking about, a video game move. Just I think you'd see someone in real life try to do that, and yet not only did he do it, but it worked. He pulled it off. He got into the top four, a chance at the championship next week in Phoenix. So who are the top four, Mitch, qualifying, have that opportunity to win it all next week?
We have Joey Logano, Christopher Bell, who won the race at Martinsville this last week. Emotional after the race. He gets himself in to compete for a championship. The aforementioned Ross Chastain and then Chase Elliott, a former champion in his own right, the 2020 season, is going to get himself into the championship four. So not a single driver in the top four is from the same team. Good representation across the board. One from Penske, one from Joe Gibbs, one from Trackhouse, and one from Hendrick. So, good representation across the board for all teams in NASCAR. Phoenix is going to be a fun one, man. Phoenix is going to be a fun one. Check this out. Just think about the possibilities here. If a rule isn't put in place before Sunday and we find Ross Chastain in another situation like that, I don't know, because Phoenix has changed its configuration, right? The finish line is past where the original turn one would be. Now that's turn four. It's kind of right before the dog leg. I don't know if it would work at a track like Phoenix, but if there's an opportunity to do it and there's no rule put in place before Sunday, damn it, you bet your ass he's going to try it again. Because like, and I would love to see it one more time before they kibosh the move altogether. But it's going to be a really super competitive race. These are four of the best drivers that we've had all year long. And I can't wait to see who gets crowned champion.
Yeah, it should be a good one. And I mean, this is just exactly, I know that NASCAR is probably going to end up, like you said, banning the move and not letting it happen. But this is exactly what you want if you're NASCAR. I mean, this was a viral moment, the most viral moment NASCAR's had in, I mean, I can't even remember. Like,
over 100 million views across all social media platforms. Like,
yeah, I mean, this is exactly what you would have hoped when you created this playoff setup and you put these, you know, cut down days and these races where the points are going to matter and the margins are slim. And you got the perfect storm where a guy like Ross Chastain had the balls enough to pull off this move to get in and create this awesome moment. And it's built momentum towards this weekend at Phoenix. And I think it's a great moment for NASCAR. I think it's awesome.
And like, it's important to keep in perspective here. A lot of people that say, oh, the playoff format sucks. Playoff format sucks. Hey, if we're still running Winston Cup format points, you don't get this moment because it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter anymore. He has to make that cutoff. You don't get that moment running the old point system. So like,
right.
Like, so credit to them sticking out this basically knockout style playoffs to produce moments like this. And I hope we get more of them, but it probably won't be with that style of move anymore, but I hope we get more moments like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. They've built up the drama in a very good way, and it's paying off here, as we saw this past week at Martinsville. Mitch, that's going to do it for the news. Great stuff there with the NASCAR update. Let's jump into the campus tour. Another big week in the world of college football. Let's start with our week 9 recap and a couple top 10 teams that got knocked off this past weekend. And let's start with the biggest game, the biggest surprise from this past weekend, and that was Kansas State absolutely dominating Oklahoma State. Number 9 Oklahoma State at number 22 Kansas State, and the Wildcats get the win 48-0. I mean, just a dominant performance all around by this Kansas State team, who has 2 losses on the season, Mitch. One of them is to TCU, and one of them is to Tulane. And Tulane is now a top 25 team, and you know, they're one of the better G5 teams. And we obviously know what TCU is, and that's the only teams that have beat Kansas State now. They beat, Oklahoma State. They've got that big win. They'll have another test this week against Texas. But wow, I mean, we had this game in our picks. We both picked Oklahoma State. I locked the Cowboys, and I didn't see this coming at all. This was crazy. This was absurd.
I mean, yeah, this was did I lock OK State?
You did not. I did. Okay. I locked them. Okay. You picked them, but you were smart enough not to lock it. So
I was still dumb enough to pick them. So like, this was an absolute blowout. OK State got exposed. Will Howard filling in for
No Adrian Martinez. In
no
this
Adrian
one,
Martinez.
So,
you know, Will Howard filled in very nicely with the 4 touchdowns. A great solid win by Kansas State. And I think that they're proving, as they beat these other top 25 teams, that, and now that, like you mentioned, Tulane is in the top 25, that maybe these losses weren't to bad teams. They weren't bad losses anymore. Like, they may have had the one bad loss, but this team is still very competitive and deserving of being in this top 25. This is not kind of a fringe team anymore.
No, absolutely. I think Kansas State is legit. We mentioned them before the season as our, I think we both had them as our dark horse candidate in the Big 12, that team that could be sneaky good. And I mean, sure enough, right now they're 2nd in the standings, only 1 loss in conference play, again, to TCU. So right now, if the season ended today, it'd be TCU and Kansas State in the Big 12 championship game. So they're right there in the top of this conference, and deservedly so after the performance they put up this past weekend. The other top 10 team, Mitch, to drop a game, and this one came to an unranked opponent, and this was a game that we picked last week. I knew Louisville was going to be a little tricky. You know, you never know about the Cardinals. I just had a feeling about that game, and sure enough, Louisville gets the win at home, 48-21. Just a dominant performance over Wake Forest, who had just entered the top 10 that past week. Sam Hartman Not a great game for him. Not a great game for the Demon Deacons at all. Three interceptions for the quarterback that, I mean, we really like him there. They couldn't get anything going on the ground. Mitch, this seems more to me. I'm going to say this. I like this Louisville team. I think Malik Cunningham is a very fun quarterback, a very fun college quarterback. I think this is more of Wake Forest putting up a dud than it is Louisville being like a real contender in the ACC or anything like that. I think they got him at home and they had a great performance. And this was, Wake Forest not showing up.
Yeah, I 100% on board with you. This was not that it looked like a completely different quarterback. That didn't look like Sam Hartman. Yeah. I mean, that was just a really bad performance on his part. Louisville, to their credit, though, stayed very balanced in their passing and rushing attack. I mean, absolutely torched him on the ground for 211, spread across like five different guys. So everyone was getting touches and everyone was getting something done. So, but I'm 100% with you. You know, credit to Louisville for getting it done, but it's definitely more of Wake Forest just not showing up and getting the job done.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. We'll see how the ACC plays out, but a lot of teams that we felt like were good at some point but haven't really emerged, other than, you know, Clemson there at the top, who remains in the top five. They've looked solid. We'll talk about them a little later in our picks, as they've got a tough test this week. But Mitch, a couple other games to highlight here. Ohio State, Penn State, number 2 Ohio State at number 13 Penn State. I think a lot of people chalk this up as a tough test for the Buckeyes. I didn't really see that. I don't believe in this Penn State team at all, and they end up losing this game 44-31. Penn State gets 17 points in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, this wasn't really that close. A pretty dominant performance, I think, by Ohio State here. And I'm not impressed by Ohio State in this one. I just think Penn State's overrated, and that's why they're ranked so high. I'm not taking much away from this game.
No, not really. I think it's funny that after you talk shit about Sean Clifford, now he's like had two great games back to back. And is starting to put up bigger numbers after you called him essentially a fake college quarterback.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome, Sean Clifford. So,
but you know what? Also, yeah, I'm not impressed by Ohio State in this one either. Like, yeah, they beat Penn State and they beat a top 15 opponent. That's awesome. But like, Ohio State hasn't really beat much of anybody yet. And so, yeah, nothing really impressive or much to take away from this one.
Yeah, I was, though, impressed, Mitch, with Tennessee's win, ranked win for the Vols this week. Number 3 Tennessee hosting number 19 Kentucky, and they beat the Wildcats 44-6. And, I thought Tennessee was going to win this game, but to win it in the dominant fashion that they did and to really make Will Levis look really bad, I thought was what stuck out to me. Because this Tennessee defense was like one of the giving up some of the most points this season in college football. One of the worst defenses in points per game allowed this season coming into this game. And they held Kentucky to 6 points. They picked off Will Levis 3 times. I thought it was a really poor performance for a guy who's been rising up draft boards and a lot of people are high on, and the Josh Allen comparisons are there. And then he looked really bad against a good team. That's not a good sign for them. I just think this is a case of Tennessee is legit, and they keep proving it to us week after week after week that this is not a flaw. This is not a fluke, that this Tennessee team is for real. And we should be regarding them at the top of the college football world.
Yeah. I mean, that combination of Hendon Hooker and Jalin Hyatt might be the best in the country.
Oh yeah.
I think it's gotta be the best quarterback wide receiver combination right now in the country. Tennessee, I know there was a lot of questions coming into the season about like, okay, are they for real? Are they actually going to do what they think they're going to do? There was hype surrounding them last year. They fell off the table. And now this team's for real. And we'll get into where they're ranked here in just a little bit, but it's completely justified where they are now, because right now Tennessee is the best college football team in the country, in my
100%.
Mind.
100%. They're playing like, and I think you can't. I think there's no doubt about it at this point. Mitch, last little thing to recap from the past week. Another head coach firing. Auburn has fired football coach Brian Harsin. They fired him on Monday. This comes after about a season and a half. He's into his second season here. as the head coach of the Tigers. They're 3-5 this season after they lost to Arkansas by 2 touchdowns at home. 9-12 in his tenure at Auburn. I never understood this hire coming from Boise State. This was the dumbest thing. I never understood why you thought the Boise State head coach was going to come to Auburn and have like good success quickly in the SEC. I never understood that. I thought that that was always a reach. I'm not surprised by this. A former running back who is actually the current running back coach, one of my favorite players, Cadillac Williams.
Oh, yeah.
As the interim head coach for the time being. I hope he gets a good opportunity because, man, I loved him for Tampa Bay in his NFL career. He's an All-American at Auburn, so he'll take over for now. But, yeah, the Harsin thing never made sense. He's out, and, you know, we'll see what they end up doing. Lane Kiffin's been the name that I've heard. You know, you've heard a lot with the success that he's had at Ole Miss. Would they try to bring him over to Auburn? You know, be interesting to see how they fill that position. But yeah, not surprising. No, not surprising.
Not at all. But I think the Brian Harsin signing was kind of like, oh, well, we caught lightning in a bottle with Gene Chizik because Gene Chizik wasn't very good at, was it Iowa State, but when before he came over. And so like, oh, well, we've done it before. Maybe we could do it again with Brian Harsin. The Gene Chizik thing just doesn't happen all the time, you know? So like, right. A confusing hire from the beginning. Rightfully so, vastly underperforming. You have one of the better running backs in the country and you can't find a way to build a sufficient offense around him. That's a tough look. So, no shocker here that he's out before the end of the year. If he was out before the end of the year, he probably would have been out at the end of the year anyway. So,
yeah.
I guess just pulling the Band-Aid off swiftly and getting it done before it's, you know, too late. So,
yeah, I guess so. It probably doesn't help that Bo Nix is out here looking like a Heisman candidate for Oregon. And you're like, wow, we couldn't get that out of the kid last year, huh? You couldn't get anything out of that kid. And he turns out to be really freaking good, huh? So, and I'm sure that that doesn't help his case either. Speaking of the Heisman, Mitch, let's jump to our Heisman watch, our top five rankings on the Sports Hour every week. A bit of a slight change this week in our rankings. We only flipped number 2 and number 3 in our top 5. So as it stands right now, our number 1 player, Hendon Hooker, quarterback, Tennessee. Number 2, Caleb Williams, quarterback, USC. Number 3, CJ Stroud, quarterback, Ohio State. Number 4, Bo Nix, quarterback, Oregon. And number 5, Max Duggan, quarterback, TCU. We swapped Caleb Williams, CJ Stroud. Stroud's had some okay couple weeks. Caleb Williams continues to put up like video game numbers. He had 4-11 and 5 touchdowns in the win last week for the Trojans. So, I mean, he's putting up the numbers. USC keeps winning. You know, I think that we felt pretty good there. But Hendon Hooker's still that number one guy until he gets knocked off and has a bad performance.
Yeah, and I don't see that happening. I don't see that happening. No. That team and Hendon Hooker is just so red hot right now. It's going to be hard to break that momentum in any way, shape, or form until probably the SEC championship game when they face some really quality opponents. And it may start this week when we look at the matchup that he has this week. But, yeah, you know,
I was going to say it may start this week, Mitch. It may be the conversation but, happens on the podcast next week. But yes,
but you know, yeah. He is the guy. And you know what? I'm cool with swapping Caleb Williams and CJ Stroud. I'm not like, we talked about how impressive CJ Stroud's numbers are. Ohio State hasn't really, I just said it earlier, Ohio State hasn't really had any impressive wins.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they beat Penn State pretty handily. But, you know, given the last few weeks, he's not been a, you know, eye-popping performances from him, and he hasn't beat anyone impressive. So I'm okay with putting Caleb Williams ahead of him. Yep. Caleb Williams lit it up last week.
Absolutely. A name to watch, Mitch, I think on the outskirts. I put him in our next group of names. Drake May, the quarterback out of North Carolina. Freshman quarterback. But check out the numbers this year. 2,600 passing yards, 29 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions. He's led the Tar Heels to a 7-1 season so far. And again, they're not in the national narrative, so he's not going to get Heisman votes. He's putting up the numbers right now. I mean, 5th in all of college football in yards. He's tied for 1st in touchdowns, and again, only 3 picks. So having a great statistical year, but he's not going to be up there unless North Carolina gets some big upsets and really moves up the rankings. But he's a name to watch because he's really lighting it up.
Yeah, super impressive from the freshman. I mean, like I said, probably not going to get any votes, and he wouldn't get any love anyway, even if he was playing for, like, Clemson, because he's a freshman. So, like, you know, he's probably not going to get the love this time around, but he replicates this again as a sophomore, and we're talking about a serious potential Heisman candidate.
Absolutely. Mitch, let's go to our upset of the week and the game I want to highlight, Mitch. UConn over Boston College. The Huskies, one of the worst college football programs we have in this in the FBS level. Just hands down, one of the worst we have in UConn. But hey, they are 4-5 this year, Mitch, and they beat Boston College 13-3 at home this past weekend. So one, UConn creeping closer to bowl eligibility. We'll see if they can pull it off. But Mitch, this is their first win over their rival Boston College ever. Ever. They've never beaten Boston College. UConn did it for the first time this past weekend. They had played 14 times. They had tied twice. 0-12-2 all time against Boston College. But they finally done it. So shout out to the Huskies. They were obviously not favored at home in this one, despite Boston College's poor season, but it didn't matter. They got it done.
Good for UConn, man. The basketball powerhouse.
That's a basketball school right there.
Basketball powerhouse, but getting it done on the gridiron is always nice to see. So good for UConn. Finally get that monkey off their back and get a big win over Boston College. My upset of the week is Missouri taking down number 25, South Carolina. Missouri 4-4 in the year after this win. Not a very good football team, but I think this is more indicative of South Carolina just can't figure it out. They can't figure out. Spencer Rattler transfers over to South Carolina from Oklahoma. He did not look good at all. 20-for-30, one interception on 171 yards passing. Give you an idea of South Carolina's rushing attack this game. Marshawn Lloyd was 7-for-30. He was the leading rusher. They rushed for 32 yards total as a team. Really poor offensive performance from South Carolina. Mizzou gets a big upset over a ranked opponent.
Yeah, for sure. South Carolina, hard to kind of make out what they are. They just seem like an average to good SEC team, you know, and probably didn't deserve to be ranked at the top 25, and their time in the top 25 very short-lived.
They're 2-3 in the conference. I mean, how good of an SEC team can they be? I mean,
Mitch, player of the week, we've given this to Chris Reynolds, the quarterback for the Charlotte 49ers. 2-7 on the season, Mitch, but they earned their second win this past weekend on the road with a dominant performance over Rice, 56-23. And no, I'm not just talking about a nice meal you eat. It wasn't like a nice sauce over rice. It was a win over the Rice Owls, the football team, Mitch. 56-23. Chris Reynolds in the game completed 16 of 19 passes, 254 yards, and 5 touchdowns. I mean, the kid threw a touchdown pass 1 every 3 completions. I mean, that's pretty damn good. You know?
That ratio holds up. That ratio holds up very well.
I checked the math, and it's confirmed. That's pretty good. So that's the pick we got today. Chris Reynolds, quarterback, Charlotte, shout out to you. Player of the week. Mitch, let's go to our college football playoff rankings reaction. We had the first edition of the college football playoff rankings that came out on Tuesday. And in what was, I think, a pretty big surprise, the Tennessee Volunteers appeared at the number one spot, the top four right now, according to the College Football Playoff Committee. Number one, Tennessee. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Georgia. Number four, Clemson, with number five, Michigan. And then number six, Alabama, the first one-loss team there. in that top six section. But the biggest news here in that top six is that Tennessee number one. And as you mentioned, Mitch, I think we're both on board with this. This seems like they should have been number one this whole time in the AP. They were number three in the AP. Georgia was the number one, then Ohio State. But the playoff committee flipping this, I think, in the right way.
Yeah, Tennessee's the best team in the country right now. I do have a problem with Clemson being in the top four. I think that Michigan should be in that top four, then Alabama five and Clemson six. Okay. So that would be my only issue with that. But other than that, the top three are definitely in the right order, I think, of Tennessee. Well, Georgia probably should be number two and then Ohio State. So quite a bit of shuffling on my end of the way I'd like to see it. But they got the right team at number one. And Dallin, that leads us into our college football trivia question of the week. Dallin, last time Tennessee finished number one in the country was 1998 when they won a national title. They beat Florida State 23-16. Tennessee was led by head coach Philip Fulmer, while Florida State was led by this coaching legend.
Oh, are we? So it's got to. It's maybe I'm overthinking this, but it's got to be Bobby Bowden, right?
That's correct. It is Bobby Bowden. Okay. I was hoping to get a little overthinking from you going, oh, I think I know this.
I paused for a second because I was like, wait, is it going to be that easy? I was like, wait, am I overthinking it? But yeah, okay, Bobby Bowden.
A good reset question.
That would have been like Peyton Manning versus like Chris Winkie at that point, right? Would that have been the quarterback at that time for Florida State? I'm trying to think of the timeline there.
Year before Chris Winkie. It was like Autzen. Autzen might have been the quarterback's name.
Yeah.
And the year after Manning, so it was T. Martin. It was T. Martin.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Great stuff. Yeah, I love it, Mitch. Great stuff there. As we look at the rest of the rankings and ran out the rest of the top 10, I think is really interesting. TCU number seven. There was a little controversy. I saw some people, mad that TCU is behind Alabama, right? We have no losses. Alabama's won, whatever. I don't really have much gripes out of these because it'll all play out how it will, right? Teams are going to rotate here in the next month or so as the season plays out. But TCU 7, Oregon 8, USC 9, LSU is at 10, Mitch. And this is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, LSU is not a top 10 team. And the playoff committee knows it, Mitch. The playoff committee knows what they're doing by putting LSU in the top 10. One, they're just looking at the fucking helmet. They're like, oh, LSU, two loss team. Oh, yeah, pretty good year. Oh, it's LSU. Oh, Brian Kelly. Oh, national champion a couple years ago. They got to be good. Boom, bump them up. But they're doing this really, Mitch. They are really doing this for you, my friend. They're doing this for the Crimson Tide. Because now, instead of going in to this weekend's game, right, Alabama's going to be in Death Valley this weekend. Instead of going in against a number 15, 16 LSU team and dominating them on the road, as Alabama will probably do, instead, they get to go on the road against a top 10, formidable, legit LSU team, earned that top 10 ranking. And then when they beat them by 20 points, all of a sudden, Alabama looks really, really good. And all of a sudden, you could justify bumping them all the way up to number four, even with that one loss, because you're like, hey, a top 10 win on the road counts for something. This is solely to boost the resume of the Alabama Crimson Tide, Mitch. And it's absurd.
It's absurd, but I like it. I mean, like, look.
I mean, you shouldn't complain about it.
No, I'm not.
I'm going to for everybody
else. I mean, I think it's a little I think it's a little funny. Like, do I think the LSU should be number 10? No, but for you to claim conspiracy behind this is a bold move. I mean, that's bold.
The committee is all conspiracy. Come on.
I know.
They want the biggest brands. They want the names. It's bad for the playoff committee if Alabama does not make the playoff. Let's just be honest. It's bad for them if Alabama doesn't make the playoff. Now, they want like one good story every year. So Tennessee is great. But like you got to fit in the big brands in there. So I don't know. It seems fishy to me. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm not complaining. Roll damn tide.
Yeah. I don't blame you. Mitch, the only other thing I thought was pretty notable about the rankings. Two group of five teams in the initial top 25. Tulane at number 19. We mentioned them with, win over Kansas State. Kansas State number 13. So obviously that's going to do a lot for Tulane. Only one loss on the season for them. And then UCF at number 25 at the bottom. But one 3-loss team in the top 25, and it's Texas who sneaks in at number 24. This is just like the LSU thing for me, Mitch. It's all brand. It's all Texas. We respect them more than they should. And they're going to play a Kansas State this week, and they're going to have some good games. And so it'll just boost the resume of everybody else to get wins over a top 25 Texas team as opposed to an unranked one. So I don't know. I thought that one was a little weird. I don't see Texas being in the top 25 at all, and they probably won't after they lose this weekend. So,
no, I mean, looking at this compared to the AP poll, NC State, UCF's a better team than Texas. Liberty's a better team than Texas right now. I mean, it just seems like it's the brand. It's the brand boost, Alan, like you were just talking about. It's the brand boost. Get Texas in there somehow. Oh, they're 3 losses. Let's put them in there. It's silly. It's silly to have them up there. I'm with you, but on that one.
Yeah, we'll see as it continues. And again,
horns down.
And I mean, they're getting a lot of credit for losing to Alabama. I'm just saying, like, we're giving Texas a shit ton of credit for like losing a game to Alabama. I mean, that's the only reason why we're even discussing.
I mean, I get it was a tight game, absurd. But it's a loss,
right?
Like,
it's absurd. But you know, I digress. Mitch, games to watch this week. We had a nice slate of games last week, but we did not go do very well in our picks, Mitch. We each only got one point last week. To recap the games, Kentucky at Tennessee, we both picked the Vols, both got the win there. Wake Forest at Louisville, I picked Louisville, I get the point there. You picked Wake Forest, you locked the Demon Deacons, Mitch. So you lost a point there. Cincinnati at UCF, this one was even, so we couldn't lock it. I picked Cincinnati, you picked UCF. The Golden Knights get it done, so you got a point there. And then Oklahoma State, Kansas State, we both picked the Cowboys. I locked Oklahoma State, and we didn't get that. I lose a point. So that all works out to 1 point for Mitch, 1 point for myself. The standings at this point, heading into our Week 10 picks, Mitch has 27 points. I have 18 points. Got a lot of ground to cover, but this is the week. I'm ready for it.
All right. Let's see it, buddy.
Let's start with the best matchup of the week by far. Number one at number three, Tennessee at Georgia. We were just discussing this, right? The Hendon Hooker, the Tennessee, the tests, the tests are going to come, and it doesn't get harder than going on the road at Georgia, right? They got Alabama at home. Right, they got Alabama at home, but they got to go on the road and prove themselves against the number three team in the country, the defending champs. And the Lions favor in Georgia, and rightfully so. Georgia favored -8 in this one at home, over under 66. Oh, boy, I'm going to let you pick first here, Mitch, because I don't know where I'm going yet. So, line is weird for the lock. But so I'm going to muse that for a bit. But who are you picking here between Tennessee and Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia -8 at home over the number one team in the country, the most prolific offense in the country. I mean, that's a really strange line that you would think Georgia would win by a whole score. I guess it's giving credit to Georgia's defense, which is fantastic. Okay, no secrets there. I'm taking Tennessee in this one in like a 3-point game. And like, it's going to be close. Like, I don't think that there's any, I don't think there's any scenario with Georgia with their offensive struggles that they've had at times covers -8. Like, I just don't see that happening. So like, I'm taking Tennessee to win the game in a close one. And I think if they beat Georgia this week, it's definitive. There's no more questions about it. Tennessee is the best team in the country.
Yeah. This has got to be such a good game. I'm going to roll with Georgia, though. I'm going to roll with the Dogs at home, because I just think that's a really tough test for this Volunteers team. And I do think they're going to be competitive. I don't think they're going to get blown out. I don't think Georgia covers. I don't think it's going to be like a big win, but that's a tough place to play. It's a tough test to have for Tennessee and Georgia's experience, right? They've been there. They've won the chip. That having that to rely on is huge. So I'm going to roll with Georgia in this one, but that's going to be a must watch game for you this weekend. If you're available 12:30 PM Pacific on CBS, that's Tennessee and Georgia. Mitch, next game up, number 4, Clemson at Notre Dame. Clemson appeared in the top 4 in this first college football playoff rankings, which is a good sign for the Tigers. Notre Dame's been better since the early struggles. They beat a number 16 team, BYU. They pretty much handled Syracuse last weekend on the road, 41-24. They've got some peculiar losses, but the talent on the roster for the Fighting Irish is, we know what that is. And there are a lot of questions around Clemson right now, especially at the quarterback position. Is it DJ? Is it the freshman again? What's the confidence level in Uiagalelei that he can perform when you need him to? And remember, it was a couple years ago where he filled in for an injured Trevor Lawrence against Notre Dame and had that big battle in South Bend back and forth with Ian Book. Notre Dame, I think, ends up pulling that one out at that time. But that was the first performance from DJ. He was electric in that game. Are we going to get that DJ? Or are we going to get more of what we've seen recently, which is not good? This is a weird one, Mitch. I'm going to go Clemson. I want to take Notre Dame so bad in this one. I really do. Because at home, Clemson's favored -3.5, right? Over under 44. It's going to be a low scoring game. But man, I just think Clemson, they'll just pull it off. But this is going to be a tight one.
This is a really tough matchup because, like you said, the Irish have looked so good recently. I'm a believer in Drew Pine. Give me Notre Dame. I'm gonna take Notre Dame in this one. Yeah.
Taking the Irish.
I like the dogs. I like dogs this week, apparently. Whoa. Dog of the week, Notre Dame. In a close one, like you said, a really close game.
Yeah, I think that's, I was on the border, but no lock though. No locks so far. We're not locking anything there. We're moving on. We're good.
Yeah, we're moving on.
Okay. All right. Now I got to see where we're going to lock here on the losses. Alabama, LSU, number 6, Alabama at number 10, LSU. Alabama's favored on the road. -13.5, over under 56.5 on this one, Mitch. It's your Crimson Tide. I'll let you go first here with your pick.
You know, I've been nervous of big lines. It's just like they make you nervous because like you're like, oh god, that's a two score game. Like, I don't know how you pick this one. I am done being scared of the big spreads. Lock it in. Alabama covers 13.5. Roll damn tide. Let's go, Alabama in the lock.
All right. All righty, Mitch. I love it. You know, I'm going to go with Bama as well. I'm not going to lock the Crimson Tide in this one. But as I mentioned earlier, I think they're just going to roll in this one. I don't think LSU is that good.
Don't be scared. Then take the lock.
We're talking 2 touchdowns. It's
minus. You just said they're
going to
win by 20. You just
said, I know, Mitch. But you locked them. So I got to lock something different now. Have an advantage here. Yes. So I'll pick Bama, but I'm not going to lock them.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to lock them, but we'll roll with the tide. And that brings us to our final game, Mitch. And this game is actually taking place on Friday night. So not a Saturday night, but a Friday night game in the Pac-12. Number 23, Oregon State at Washington. 7:30 p.m. kickoff Pacific time on ESPN2. Washington. Unranked, but favored at home, -4.5, over under 54.5. Both teams are 6-2. Both teams have had pretty solid seasons. And Oregon State's in the top 25. They're only 2 losses, Mitch, a 3-point loss at home to USC and a 42-16 loss on the road in Salt Lake City to the Utes. Washington, meanwhile, a loss on the road at UCLA, who has turned out to be obviously a very good team, and then a puzzling loss on the road at Arizona State. So I think this is a pretty even matchup here. I really do. And I'm having a difficult time picking this one. But damn it, I picked the Beavers in the preseason to be my dark horse team in the Pac-12. I thought they were going to make some noise. Here they are in the top 25. Here they are with the chance. I got to roll with Oregon State, and I got to lock them. I got to lock the underdog here. So I'm going to lock Oregon State underdog on the road, but they get it done over the Huskies.
Mm.
This is a tough one, Mitch. I could have gone either way on here. I really like this Washington team, too.
I really like this. I love Michael Penix Jr. I love, love, love Michael Penix Jr. And for that reason, I am taking the Huskies in this one. Give me the Huskies to cover. I'm not going to lock them. I can't. But, you know, they'll cover 4.5, I think. They'll cover 4.5 and get this one done. I like the Huskies. Yeah,
that'll be a good one on Friday night if you get the chance to watch that. Pac-12 action should be fun. That's going to do it for the picks, Mitch, to wrap up the campus tour. We got to hit the player to know before the NFL draft and to recap the names that we've heard here so far. Hendon Hooker, quarterback, Tennessee. Michael Mayer, tight end, Notre Dame. Joey Porter Jr., cornerback, Penn State. Drew Sanders, linebacker, Arkansas. Bijan Robinson, running back, Texas. Jordan Addison, wide receiver, USC. And Bryce Young, quarterback, Alabama. And the most recent entry, Mitch, and our first offensive lineman. And I've been waiting to talk O-line, kind of see, you know, who was going to establish themselves, who was going to build the most buzz. And without a doubt, this is the guy that people are getting excited about right now in the draft world when it comes to the offensive line position, and that is Olu Fashanu, the offensive tackle from Penn State. Olu Fashanu is a guy with only 9 career starts, Mitch. He doesn't have the body of work. He is 19 years old. Draft eligible, those. Draft eligible, but 19 years old. But what he has shown at the position in his young career is catching the attention of everybody in the draft world. 6'6", 321 pounds, playing tackle for Penn State. This is his third year in the program. But again, you know, classifications are weird, so he's technically a sophomore, but draft eligible this year and rising up draft boards. Dane Brugler of The Athletic, the draft expert for The Athletic, updated his draft big board, Mitch, and he had Fashanu not only as the first offensive tackle, but the number 5 prospect overall. I mean, just behind like Will Anderson, Bryce Young, Jalen Carter. I mean, those are the types of guys that we're talking about. And Fashanu all the way up there. And listen, I think before the season, Fashanu was viewed as a guy that, you know, maybe with the inexperience, you'd feel comfortable moving him into guard. Maybe you weren't convinced of him out there at tackle. But, I mean, he's proven his own this year with Penn State breaking out this season in 2022. He's been one of the best pass protectors. No sacks allowed this season. And I think in a tackle class and an offensive line class, as I mentioned before, that isn't the strongest. There's no stars at the top. There's not a lot of excitement about that top group, especially compared to, you know, Charles Cross and Ike Ekwonu and Evan Neal last year, right? Peter Skoronski is going to be up there, but he's got short arms. Some teams are going to want to move him into guard. Some teams won't like him at tackle. Rashawn Slater has helped that narrative, but there's going to be mixed feelings on Skoronski, Broderick Jones. I mean, there's not a lot of guys really drawing attention, but Olu Fashanu is rising up the boards right now. Will he end up a top 10 pick? I don't know. I think that's going to end up being a little rich with the way the draft class is playing out right now. I think tackle will slip a bit out of the top 10, but he's certainly a name to watch in the offensive line class. Again, Olu Fashanu, offensive tackle, Penn State, that's the player to know before the NFL draft this week.
God, 19 years old, December 5,
yep,
on Brugler's list. I mean, that's incredible. That's incredible. Yep.
I mean, we're talking about a trajectory, and I think the comparison is hard because this other guy was truly a generational prospect, but Penei Sewell was just 20 years old when he was drafted by the Detroit Lions a few years ago, right? And a raw talent coming out of Oregon. He's not Penei Sewell, because Penei Sewell was a physically just absurd athlete, and the raw potential of him is what made him go so high. Fashanu is not. He's not that type of athlete, but he is sound, and he's just proven to be sound. He's got a good build. He's got good athleticism, but he's not a freak at that level like a Penei Sewell would have been. But when you're that young and you have that much time to get these guys learning the right way and in the program, and we've seen Penei Sewell develop over the last couple of years, I mean, certainly that's going to help Fashanu here in that situation. So
love it.
All righty, Mitch. Well, that's going to do it for the campus tour. That's going to do it for the first half of the podcast. We're going to take a break here and hit a mid-roll. And on the other side, we will do our week 8 NFL recap, talk some NFL trade deadlines, and give our quick picks for NFL week 9. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for?
Welcome back in to the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and Dallin. Hope you enjoyed a little break there. We got some NFL to get into. A lot of NFL news. Trade deadline went absolutely wild yesterday, so we're going to get into those significant trades that were made, and of course we got our quick picks. But Dallin, before we get in to all the NFL news, I was doing some thinking. We've had the pit of misery on this show for a long time. We've had a lot of entrants into the pit of misery. People have served their sentences and have left. There are some reoccurring people in the pit of misery that just can't figure it out. But we need some positivity on this show, Dallin. We need some positivity. Pit of misery is not always a positive thing. Some of it might be funny sometimes, but it's not always a positive thing. So we're starting a new group here, Dallin. It's called the Boys Club. The Boys Club. Anyone can be in the Boys Club. It's not just exclusive to males. Ladies, you are welcome into the Boys Club as well. But basically, it's a man, you did something really cool. You're in the Boys Club now. Or, hey, this is an outstanding citizen. You're in the Boys Club, right? It's a positive thing. And I think it's time that, you know, you and I too, Dallin, this will be a collaborative effort. I'm the president of the Boys Club. You, of course, are my vice president. So, you know.
Okay. Yes.
So decisions will be made mutually. But I do have the founding fathers. The okay. Founding fathers of the Boys Club, which will be the first 3 entrants into the Boys Club are honorary. They're deserving. And let's just start at the beginning with my favorite personality in sports, Shaq. Shaq is automatically in the Boys Club. I mean, automatically. He's just a dude, man. Obviously, all the things he did on the court, but all the stuff that he does off the court, the personality that he is. Shaq, easy one as a founding father.
Yeah, I mean, DJ Diesel, come on.
I know, right? DJ Aristotle, the Big Diesel, the Big Cactus, the Big Galactus, all of them. Superman, Shaq, easy one in. John Daly is going to be the second founding father in this one. I mean, just a dude, man. John Daly's just a dude. Questionable things that he says or does sometimes, but you know what? A guy that's going to be a great addition to the Boys Club. A great senior citizen to the Boys Club. Now, he's getting up there in age now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He's not getting any younger. John Daly, But number three, I think, is someone that people might have forgotten. Alfred Big Al D'Elia. And Dallin, you might recognize this kid as, my name's Alfred D'Elia, my friends call me Big Al, and I hit dingers. What a dude. Like, just play the clip. Play the clip for the people that don't recognize that.
Hi, my name's Alfred D'Elia. At home, they call me Big Al, and I hit dingers.
I mean, what a guy. What a guy. Big Al has got to get in to the Boys Club as one of the founding fathers. We're representing all ages here in the Boys Club.
Yeah.
Everyone's welcome. But those are our three founding fathers into the Boys Club. But we do have our first entry into the Boys Club, Dallin. So as the vice president, I want to run this one past you. Ross Chastain.
Oh, yeah.
Is into the Boys Club.
Easy. I mean, you pull off some shit like that, you're in. I love this eclectic group and the foundation you've set here in the Boys Club. It's a great, great group of guys. I'm no arguments here from me. Looking forward to bringing some positivity onto but highlighting some of the good things people are doing, not always the bad. I like that.
Yeah. That's what we're doing.
That misery is not going anywhere, though. Don't worry, folks.
It's still
here. And when people deserve it, they're getting punished.
And you know what? Going from the Boys Club to the Pit of Misery, not off the table.
Oh,
not off the table.
Now we're talking about some crazy shit there. I mean, the possibilities.
I mean,
okay.
Yeah, it's not off the table, buddy. So there we go. That's the Boys Club, man. And yeah, it'll be fun to see who we can add in, who we can get in to the positive part, the positive side of.
I love it.
If there's the Pit of Misery, then there's like the penthouse at the top of the castle. And that's where the Boys Club is. And they're just kicking it, having a good time. Just guys being dudes, you know.
I love it. If you guys have suggestions on a given week, if you see something notable, a performance, a moment, and you're like, that guy deserves to be in the Boys Club, let us know. You know, let us know on Anchor. Let us know on social media if you've got suggestions. We'd love to hear it. Great stuff, Mitch. Looking forward to hearing more about the Boys Club. So
hopefully we have an entry every week. That'd be great. Yes. If we had an entry every week. So
gotta see some cool shit.
Let us know if you see something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mitch, let's jump into our NFL recap here at the end, back half of the podcast. We're going to do our week eight recap, but we're going to focus on the NFL trade deadline. Because that was a lot. There was a lot of movement, a lot of significant names, some not so significant names, but ultimately pretty active this year on the trade deadline, Mitch. So let's jump in here. I want to start with something that happened. This was not, my recollection is correct, and maybe it's not, but I don't think this trade happened on the final day, correct? This did not happen on Tuesday, and I'm referring to the Roquan Smith trade. That's where I want to start.
That happened on Monday.
That happened on Monday, correct. So right before, but obviously we're going to include it in here because we haven't talked about it, but Roquan Smith, linebacker for Chicago, we talked about in the preseason, early season, requesting a trade, where he would go. Well, he has been finally dealt. He moves to Baltimore, the Ravens, acquiring the former top 10 pick, and they send back AJ Klein, a second round pick in 2023 and a fifth round pick in 2023 that is conditional and from the New England Patriots. So a second and a fifth and a mid-level linebacker in exchange for Roquan Smith, who, again, top 10 pick, but he's going to get paid this offseason, Mitch, and he's going to get paid good money because he's a good young linebacker. So this is not just Chicago moving on from good players. This is Chicago knowing we don't want to pay $16 to $18 million for a linebacker. Not where we're at right now. And that's the decision they made. I don't fault the Bears for that. I think getting a second and a fifth is pretty good for a linebacker who you're trading, who whoever inherits is going to have to guarantee him $40, $50 million in a year. So I think it's a good trade for the Bears. I'm very intrigued by the fit with Baltimore, though.
really good trade for the Bears, and it makes sense on a lot of different levels. Like, he wasn't going to re-sign with Chicago. There was the turmoil before the beginning of the season, right, between Roquan and the Bears. He wasn't going to re-sign. The Bears need to spend money in other places, and it's like, well, do we want to – it would make no sense to franchise tag him. And also, why would we give an off-ball linebacker all this money when we can spend this money on a pass rusher or bolstering the secondary a little bit better? You know, why would we spend that money on an off-ball guy? Makes perfect sense for them to trade him. And, you know, the haul maybe could have been slightly better, but still a pretty decent haul for a very, very good young talent. And as a Bears fan, two Ravens fans, let me tell you, you've got a really good young player over there. I would do a lot to try to retain him, pair him up with Patrick Queen. Are you kidding me? That's a hell of a pair.
Yeah, and I think that's the most exciting thing for me about this trade is that possibility and what that means for Queen, because Queen's had an up and down career so far in the NFL, right? He hasn't really lived up to the hype of that first round pick coming out of LSU, but he is better attacking the ball, and Roquan is good in coverage. He can be, you know, more, I think they balance each other out really well, and perhaps having Roquan there allows Patrick Queen to be used in better ways, right? Rushing the pass or exactly. At the line of scrimmage and sort of highlights his skill set a little bit more. So I think not only is this going to be good for Roquan, just adding a good player, but I think it'll also make their young linebacker in Patrick Queen that much better as well. So, you know, Baltimore needs it. They're competing right now in the AFC North, trying to make big moves. And, you know, could they have gone for a pass catcher? You know, they could certainly use weapons for Lamar Jackson, but you know, they double down on defense as we've seen them do, and we'll see if it pays off. But your Bears made another trade, Mitch, this time acquiring a player, you know, trade away Roquan Smith. They also trade away Robert Quinn. That was like for what, a fourth, fifth round pick right to the Eagles. That was last week.
That's whatever.
I mean, they moved on for Robert Quinn, but they added a wide receiver for Justin Fields, and they added Chase Claypool from the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers trade Claypool to the Bears in exchange for the Bears' 2023 second round pick. So Bears owned 2 seconds because of the Roquan trade, but Pittsburgh did not get Baltimore's second. They got Chicago's, which we would all assume is going to be the better of those two picks, likely a top 50 pick. So I'll get your thoughts. I'll go quick here because I want to get your thoughts. Obviously, as a Bear fan, I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on this, but I don't mind second round pick for Claypool, who has shown some good things, and how desperate they are at pass catcher. Like, you have to make a move. But a top 50 pick for a kid who hasn't shown consistency in his young career, that's a little tough to swallow. It's a little tough pill to swallow. I don't know. It's just maybe a little rich than I would like, but I don't hate it.
I get the second rounder. I get the second rounder, right? I just wish they would have flipped that Ravens pick back. Like, they wouldn't have flipped their own pick back, because that's obviously going to be the higher of the two picks, right? Clearly. But I think that this gives Chase Claypool a really good opportunity to reset and be a true number one. Like, that's a confusing wide receiver room in Pittsburgh. Like, there's not a true number one. There's just a bunch of guys together, right? And no one really, it seems like one guy stands out over the other each and every week, which I guess isn't such a bad thing if you're the Steelers. But it's not a great thing for the individual player, because you're not given that opportunity to be the true number one. Chase Claypool has that opportunity to do it. Bigger bodied guy, Mapletron, they called him. You know, he's the Canadian version of Calvin Johnson, and he's got this big body guy able to go up and get the ball. He's going to have the opportunity to do that. And you know what? It complements, it contrasts, actually, it should be the word we say, contrasts exceptionally well with what the Bears have at the rest of their wide receiver core anyway. Bunch of quick, speedy, shifty guys. Darnell Mooney keeps trying to be like Tyreek Hill, and he's just not Tyreek Hill. Like, he's not as you can stretch the field, but not like Tyreek can. It might be better to have a big, tall weapon guy that you can go throw the ball up to go get it, and not have to trust 5'10" Darnell Mooney to go up and get it. So, I like this for the Bears. It puts them in a better opportunity. He's got a year and a half left on his contract, so they have another year with him. If they're able to figure some stuff out in the draft and free agency, they have a ton of cap space that can go make things happen now. If they can build a good team or start to build a good team around what they have right now that may coerce Chase Claypool to re-sign. And it at least puts the Bears in a optimistic position rather than, you know, opposed to where they were before this trade.
For sure. And listen, they needed to improve that wide receiver room, hands down. Like, there's no question about that. So I understand perhaps there's a little more desperation from Chicago to acquire somebody.
Sure.
And be willing to go a little higher than everybody else to go get that guy, and justifiably so. I will also say that if we're talking about, okay, let's say they don't trade for Chase Claypool and they're pick number 46 and they're going to go take a wide receiver in the second round, are you really going to feel that much better about whoever you get in the second round of wide receiver than you would about Chase Claypool, who you at least know has been a competent and good NFL wide receiver before? So with the way that this draft class is, I think that, you know, this year, I think this sort of leans more towards this was probably the right move for the Bears. And again, you get half a season to test him out with Fields this year, plus the full year next year, decide if he's part of your future long-term. And I mean, if it hits, obviously it's great value.
And back to your point, I mean, it depends on who they take with that second pick. Like if they make another Velus Jones pick, then of course you're not happy about
it. Right.
But if they go take a guy that's early 20s and not 26 years old in the draft, then sure, you feel a lot better about that. So yeah, that's totally dependent on who they take.
Yeah.
But all hypotheticals, I guess so.
Yeah, a very interesting move. Interesting to see the fit. I am optimistic about the complement between Mooney and Claypool. I think that'll be, anything's going to help Justin Fields at this point. They need to do anything to help out their young quarterback. Another NFC North team, though, Mitch, made a move for a pass catcher, and it was a swap between NFC North teams. The Detroit Lions shipped off former top 10 pick. We've seen a theme here, top 10 picks on the move. T.J. Hockenson, the tight end, on the move. Detroit trades T.J. Hockenson, a 2023 fourth-round pick and a 2024 conditional fourth-round pick, to the Minnesota Vikings, who send back a second-round pick in 2023 and a third-round pick in 2024. I've seen the draft charts on this. Essentially, what this breaks out to is like a third-rounder. Is the same, you know, with the switching back of draft compensation. Essentially, what this is a late third round pick for T.J. Hockenson. I think when you put it in that context, I think this is good for Minnesota. I get this for Minnesota. It was a little surprising at first, out of nowhere, right? But I mean, think about it, Mitch. They have Justin Jefferson. He's the guy, and in a couple of years, you're gonna pay him, and you're gonna pay him $25 million a year or whatever it's going to take at that point. Like, you're going to have a lot of money invested at the pass catching position in Justin Jefferson. And you know that you don't have any wide receivers on your roster you feel comfortable with, and a second wide receiver, a good number two wide receiver in the NFL these days, costs you $16 to $20 million a year, right? Christian Kirk just got what, 18 from the Jacksonville Jaguars on the open market. Right. So if you're saying I can go pay a wide receiver two, and I don't even know who that guy would be, but with this money, I could go maybe find a wide receiver two to pair Justin Jefferson and pay him $18 million a year. Or I could trade for T.J. Hockenson, who is not one of the best tight ends in the league, but he's a top eight tight end. He's a Pro Bowl, you know, hovering around Pro Bowl level tight end. And he's going to be my number two option. And he's only going to cost $14-15 million a year. I think that's a smart move. I really like this move for Minnesota. It helps you now with Kirk Cousins as your quarterback. You're 6-1. You're having a good season, but it also helps if you move on to a rookie quarterback at some point. If you're going to sort of reset this roster, move on from Cousins and get a young guy in there, and that's the direction you end up in, having Justin Jefferson and T.J. Hockenson as pass catching options for a young quarterback is going to be a great position to put them in. So it's a win for now. It's a win for the future. I think it's good value. And the way that the draft value shakes out, I think right call for Minnesota. Detroit's not worth paying him the money. The timeline doesn't make sense for them. They're not as competitive as Minnesota is right now. So I get them trading him away. And it's a good trade either all around.
I mean, It's a huge win for Minnesota. Big loss for Detroit. You get essentially what is a third rounder in return for a top 10 pick. This guy was taken 9th overall in his draft class. TJ Hockenson, I think, has been capped by what Detroit's been able to give him. And yeah. I think that he's a far more talented receiver, player than what Detroit really was able to let him be. I think that he's going to be kind of unlocked when he gets to Minnesota. He has a more competent quarterback in Kirk Cousins back there. He doesn't have to worry about being highlighted all the time because everyone's worried about Justin Jefferson. So, I mean, this is a great move for Minnesota. It's a great move for TJ Hockenson, and Detroit's the clear loser in this one because I don't think they really got the compensation that TJ Hockenson is actually worth.
Yeah, I will say, Mitch, I just don't know what anyone's paying for trading for a tight end that you have to now pay
an extension to,
right? And I think, like, I get he was a top 10 pick, and that does matter, but he is a tight end, and you are going to have to pay him. So
yeah, I'm not saying that, like, you know, he should be, you know, treated the same way as a number two wide receiver or, you know, a running back or anything like that. You know, I'm not saying that he should be treated the same way, but, like, that was a huge investment that Detroit took in TJ Hockenson. And, you know, it just feels like they didn't really get a whole lot in return for him compared to the investment that they put into him.
They didn't recoup their value, but that's kind of the position you put yourself in when you draft a top 10 tight end, right? Because no matter what, you're not getting your value back for that guy. You're never going to get your value back for that guy. You know, quarterbacks, wide receivers, some of those guys, you know, they're still worth a lot. But when you draft that position, you put yourself in a tough spot, and certainly that's where Detroit was. But I'm very excited about the fit with Minnesota. I agree with you. I think he has more to give than he showed in Detroit, and I think we're going to see that hopefully the second half of this season with the Vikings. Mitch, the other big move, and honestly the biggest move of the trade deadline, happened right before the deadline passed. The Denver Broncos moving on from Bradley Chubb, the young pass rusher, former top five pick just a few years ago at North Carolina State. They sent him and a 2025 fifth round pick to the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins trading back Chase Edmonds, the first round pick in 2023 that's the San Francisco 49ers first round pick, and a 2024 fourth round pick. So Denver moves on from Bradley Chubb. I want to focus mainly on the Miami part of this, Mitch, because Miami, this is amazing. Miami turned the three first round picks that they got from the Niners, right? They got three first round picks from the Niners to move back in that draft, right? For the Niners to move up for Trey Lance. San Francisco gave up three first-round picks. And Miami has turned those picks into trading up for Jalen Waddle, trading for Tyreek Hill, and now trading for Bradley Chubb. I mean, I don't care how good Trey Lance is. Unless he's a Hall of Famer, like, Miami wins that trade 1,000 times out of 1,000. It's not even close. I mean, the amount of talent they've been able to cap. And I love this move, Mitch. I love this move. Listen, Miami's 5-3. They're feeling competitive. They've made some big moves to Teron Armstead, Tyreek Hill, new head coach, trying to build around Tua. But this is a great move because it's a win now and it's a win later. Bradley Chubb is a great young pass rusher. I know it hasn't been everything you'd want to see from a former top five pick, but I think he's well worth this investment. He's well worth the extension that they're going to have to give him to keep him. And he's well worth the first round pick, because if you hit a foundational piece at the edge, which they do not have, they've got great secondary players on that defense, but they do not have a foundational piece in that front seven along that defensive line. A lot of young players. But if you got a guy there, it changes everything for Miami. Changes the whole dynamic of this team. That defense is that much better. And you can talk yourself into being in that contender tier. And I think that's what Miami has done. At least that's what they see themselves as doing with this move. We'll see if it pays off for them in that way. But I am a big fan of this move. Well worth the shot here, I think, for Miami.
Yeah, I think from a personnel standpoint, this just makes all the sense in the world. to get an edge rusher. I don't remember them having an edge rusher like this since Cameron Wake.
Jason Taylor? I mean, really, you know?
I mean, they needed this so bad. And Bradley Chubb, I know he had 12 sacks as a rookie, and he hasn't really replicated those numbers as well. Now, you know, he played with Von Miller in some of those seasons, so, you know, a lot of distraction. So, you know, there was some distraction away from him. But when Von Miller left, you know, now Bradley Chubb's the guy to block. He probably could have been taking on a lot of double teams with that. Probably he was getting spotlighted a lot. And was losing, you know, was not putting up those numbers because he was being so heavily blocked. Now he's in Miami where they could free it up a little bit. They got a really good defense over there, a very unique defense. They use a lot of disguise. And Bradley Chubb could be freed up to have himself a career revival in Miami. I love the fit. Yes. And I love the deal for Miami and how they've turned those first round picks into superstars.
Yeah, I mean, think about the way that Miami stacks the line of scrimmage with all those linebackers, and they blitz a lot, but then they'll drop back guys, and they're trying to mess with you in that pass rush scenario. And I mean, just imagine Bradley Chubb coming off the edge there, and the tackle doesn't know if this guy blitzing, am I taking, you know? And that I'm with you. I think it's going to free him up for some good looks, and you know, I think for Denver, it's fairly surprising. Obviously, this is a team when they traded for Russell Wilson that felt like they were competing and trying to contend now. I don't know if this is an admission of we're not contending now. I don't think just trading away Bradley Chubb says we're throwing in the towel for 2022. I think some people have said that. I don't agree. I don't think it's that. I think they like what they've seen from Baron Browning. He's looked really good out of Ohio State. He's come on strong this year. I think they looked at the future of their salary cap situation, right? I think they looked at the contract situation. They're paying Russell Wilson a shit ton of money. They've signed all of those wide receivers to extensions. Garrett Bowles, the tackle, is locked up with an extension. They're going to re-sign Patrick Surtain. Like, at a certain point, the money's going to go. What else do you have left? And so maybe this was a situation where, like, listen, now we can save ourselves this against the cap now. And this first round pick, which we didn't have any first round picks because we traded them away for Russell Wilson. Now we've got a first to work with in the draft, whether they do address an edge rusher with it, whether they add somebody else to the mix, you know, with that pick, we'll see. But obviously big win for Miami, not as big of a win for Denver, but I can kind of see the logic here. Though, again, you're trading away a top five pick at the edge position. Unless he's Cleveland Farrell, like unless it's an absolute bust, it just feels hard. It just feels like you're letting go a really good player.
Yeah, it has to feel bad. We fucked up.
Yeah, a little. So a fan base who's worrying after a 3-5 start, you know, not the sign they wanted to see this week, trading away one of their better players. Miami did make a move as well. Obviously, they traded Chase Edmonds in this move. So one of their running backs gone. They did pick up a running back. We'll talk about some of these lighter moves. These are not some of the bigger ones that we've discussed so far. But Jeff Wilson, San Francisco running back, headed to Miami for a 2023 fifth round pick. So Miami replaces Chase Edmonds with Jeff Wilson, obviously familiar with Mike McDaniel there last year in San Francisco. So that would made a ton of sense with, and after the McCaffrey addition, no need for Jeff Wilson anymore for San Francisco. So Miami quickly patches the running back hole there, I think, in a really smart way.
Yeah. There's something about Miami and San Francisco running backs, right? You know, Matt Breida signs with Miami.
Yeah.
Then they go out and they make a deal with Raheem Mostert. Now they're bringing in Jeff Wilson. Like,
just
they just
swap them back and forth.
They just Miami loves San Francisco running backs. Yeah. And they add another one. Jeff Wilson, he's a good third down guy, you know, and a great backup, a guy that you can lean on to be a workhorse if you need him to. So
yeah, can we give them like dual citizenship, you know? Can they be both Niners and Dolphins running backs, and then they can kind of just like share them every week, you know, send them back and forth? Because
I mean, Mike McDaniel and Kyle Shanahan have a great relationship. They might be able to work something out, but yeah. I highly doubt that. But you know,
Mitch, another running back move. I thought this was an interesting Indianapolis trading Nyheim Hines. Sending Nyheim Hines over to Buffalo, all kinds of running backs. And they're adding another one. And they did send one back though. They acquired Nyheim Hines. They trade back Zach Moss and a conditional sixth round pick in 2023. To me, Mitch, this, I mean, listen, this is a Buffalo team that clearly we're in championship window. Marginal improvements are wins for us at this point. And Nyheim Hines is going to be a marginal improvement over James Cook right now. And I think that's what this is simply, is we don't trust James Cook enough right now as a rookie. I think he's been good. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But in this window, they clearly feel like that third down running back, pass protection, pass catching, we need to have something better there. Nyheim Hines will give that to you. I think, like, you know what you're getting out of him. And just another weapon for Josh Allen to have in that offense, smart move by the Bills.
I'm not going to lie, Dallin, outside of the Bears trade for outside of the Bears moves, because I thought they were super smart and well calculated. This is my favorite move of the trade deadline. I mean, this is my favorite move. The Buffalo needed that third down pass catching running back, and they got it in Nyheim Hines. I mean, vastly overshadowed by the struggles that has gone on in Indianapolis, but he's been solid. And he's always been a solid pass catching back, obviously overshadowed by how great Jonathan Taylor's been. Maybe not so much this year, but last year, Jonathan Taylor was so dominant. We kind of forgot about Nyheim Hines. This year, he has been productive for him, and he has all the skill sets for this to work in Buffalo's offense. This was a fantastic ad. Maybe not a guy that's playing, you know, probably not a guy that's playing over 50% of snaps, but a guy that's going to be absolutely available and trustworthy when you need him to be. I love this ad for Buffalo.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A very smart move by them. There were a number of other smaller moves. We won't mention those. I just want to talk about one more here, Mitch, and that was the Calvin Ridley trade. This is just weird for obviously so many levels. One, because Calvin Ridley is suspended right now for the entire season. So he is not playing and not planning on playing this whole season. But the Jacksonville Jaguars made a trade with the Atlanta Falcons to acquire Calvin Ridley. And Jacksonville sent a conditional 2023 fifth round pick and a conditional 2024 fourth round pick. Now, the conditions on this are some of the most unique conditions you'll ever see on draft compensation in the NFL. Like, we never see this kind of complexity, but a complex situation with Calvin Ridley, currently suspended, hasn't played in basically 2 years, when he will show up next summer with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, you're talking about a lot of risk here, hence the compensation. But here are the conditions in 2024, Mitch, on that fourth rounder going to Atlanta. If Calvin Ridley is on the roster to start the season, it's a fourth round pick. Okay. If he reaches certain incentives based in, you know, probably playing time and statistical markers, it'll move up to a third. If Calvin Ridley signs a contract extension with the Jacksonville Jaguars at the end of the season, which he'd be eligible for, then it would become a second round pick. So there's like a wide variance of outcomes here with this, which is just so fascinating. And again, there's a lot not known because of the fact that he hasn't played. But I mean, shoot, if you're Jacksonville and it's like he ends up being a great player and you give up a second round pick for a guy who looked like a Pro Bowl wide receiver, I mean, that's great. That's a huge win. I love the thought here in Jacksonville. Why not take a shot on a guy like this? Because if it pays off for you, it's huge. And if it doesn't, you know, you give up a fourth and a fifth, you know?
The creativity of this deal with all the stipulations is not only intriguing, but very smart on the part of both Atlanta and Jacksonville. Like you just said, Jacksonville takes a shot on a guy. If it works out and he signs a contract extension and he looks like Pro Bowl level, they give up second round for him. Hey, then win-win, I guess. If he doesn't turn out to be that, oh, well, we give up a fifth rounder for Calvin Ridley and it didn't work out. So what? Like,
right.
Very smart on both sides to kind of work out these stipulations. I'm sure Jacksonville had some hands in figuring out what those stipulations were. This wasn't Atlanta trying to just pinpoint what they wanted if sure. Calvin Ridley turns out to be, you know, X, Y, or Z. So very intriguing deal.
Yeah, well, and if you're Atlanta, you're like, listen, we got this guy. He's not even playing with us. Maybe he wasn't even in your plans. Maybe they knew, listen, we're not bringing this guy back. Like, he's not going to be a part of the organization. and you just got to flip him for the chance to turn into like a third or a second next year. Like, that's a very valuable draft asset for a guy who may not have been a part of your plans at all. So, I mean, it could hit huge for Atlanta. It could hit huge for Jacksonville if it pays off. And I just love this. Also, just on the note here, Calvin Ridley suspended for gambling on NFL games last year while he was not with the team. And the game that he gambled on, that he got suspended for, the Atlanta Falcons versus the Jacksonville Jaguars. And here he is joining the Jaguars now in just beautiful poetry to wrap up that saga there.
Life is funny like that, isn't it?
It is amazing. It is amazing. All right, Mitch, that's going to do it for the trade deadline. Let's wrap up the podcast here with our quick picks for the NFL week 9. Last week, yeah, your boy did pretty good. I gained a game in our picks, Mitch. 9-6 on the week for me, 8-7 on the week for you. So that puts us for the season. Mitch, you lead 71-53-1. I am 65-59-1. So 6 games back, but shipped 1 away. We'll slow and steady here, it looks like.
Slow and steady wins the race, Dallin. Unless you're me, because I plan on winning the race. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, we shall see.
Hopefully I took a lot of ballsy picks last week. So.
Yeah, it is true. We'll see how it goes this week, but we remain tightly contested here in our picks. And let's not waste any more time, Mitch. Let's get started with our week 9 picks on Thursday night in a horrible game for Thursday night football. Like, what is this? Philadelphia Eagles. They're headed to Houston. They're taking on the Texans, and they're going to win by 20 points. Like, why is Amazon doing this to us? I'm taking the Eagles for this one. Come on.
20 points, man. That's generous for the Houston Texans. I mean, let's talk about 40. Fly, Eagles, fly. Give me the Eagles on the road over the Texans. Following that game, the Chargers, they are leaving the City of Angels, headed down to Atlanta to take on the Atlanta Falcons. Give me the Chargers in this one. I like them against the Falcons. Falcons, tough loss this last week. Overtime loss to the Carolina Panthers. Maybe a rebound opportunity. A close win, over the Carolina Panthers. I think the Chargers get this one done on the road, though. Give me the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, Falcons leading the AFC South or NFC South right now at 4-4. Chargers 4-3 and in desperate need of a win. I'm going to roll with LA in this one, Mitch. Hard to pick. Atlanta is just a fun team. They're going to be in it. It's going to be close, but Chargers need to get some wins quick if this season is going to be anything close to expectations. So give me Justin Herbert and the Chargers on the road. Mitch, your Chicago Bears will be hosting the Miami Dolphins and new addition Bradley Chubb, perhaps. We'll see how much, you know, playing time he gets with his new team. But the Dolphins looking to take this second half and put themselves at the top of the AFC. This is going to be a good step in that direction. Give me Miami on the road over the Bears.
There's an avenue. There's an avenue where this happens. Give me the Bears! Give me the Bears. Bears offense has looked pretty good the last couple weeks, and I think that this continue, like, they were in it with Dallas until they weren't, right? They had the two big turnovers. They were hanging tough with Dallas against a really good Dallas defense. Miami's defense, not nearly as good as Dallas's. I'm going to take the Bears. You got to be crazy if you think I'm not taking them. Things have been going right since I have been. So give me the Bears at home in the Windy City over Miami. Following that game, Carolina, the Panthers, they're heading over to the home of some Skyline cheerleaders, Cincinnati, take on the Cincinnati Bengals. Dallin, I wish I could tell you keep pounding, but I can't. Give me the Bengals at home over the Carolina Panthers, and probably a closer game than people would imagine. I could see this being a one-score game.
Yeah, I mean, this Panthers team, listen, I hope they lose games because I want a quarterback. So we got to be at the top of the draft board. I'd love to win. I'd love to say keep pounding too, but we need a future quarterback. So I'd like to be in the top 5. So I hope we lose some games, but they're going to be close. I mean, lost in overtime to Atlanta last week on the road. And I think this is no obsession. I think this is going to be a close one as well, but I'm rolling with the Bengals. Just an embarrassing loss on Monday night to the Browns. I mean, the Bengals offense without Ja'Marr Chase just looked absolutely lost. So I think they get it looking better this week against Carolina. Mitch, NFC North matchup. The Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers in desperate need of a win. Head to Detroit to take on Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions. Give me Green Bay in this one. It doesn't feel good. Kind of wanted to pick the Lions, but man, the Packers desperately need a win. It's do or die time now if they're going to be in the playoffs. So got to beat Detroit. Give me the Packers.
Kind of wanted to take the Lions. Dallin, it is everyone over the Lions right now. The Lions are not playing good football. Give me the Packers and an easy one, I think, over Detroit. I think it's a good rebound game for them. Good confidence booster game. Kind of get them back in the right direction that Green Bay needs to be in. Give me the Packers in Motor City. Following that game, we have the Las Vegas Raiders. They're headed over to the swamps of Jacksonville to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I like Las Vegas in this one. Don't count out the Raiders. I know it was an embarrassing loss last week. Got shut out. Maybe start to count them out now, but not quite yet. Not quite yet. Just hang tight with me here. Rebound win over the Jaguars. I like the Raiders on the road.
Yeah, Mitch, I'm going with the Jags in this one at home. Disappointing loss in London to the Broncos last week, but this Jags team, they're not what we thought when the season started. They're not that sneaky, you know, could compete in the AFC, could be a wild card team. They're not that, but they are improved from last year, and they're going to be a tough out for a lot of teams. And at home against this Raiders team, I think they get it done. Before we move on, though, can that be garbage game of the week?
It was either this one or the next one, so...
I like this last. Like Indianapolis. I like Vegas. Excuse me. I like Vegas, Jacksonville. So let's give that one a little garbage game of the week here.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Alrighty, Mitch. We are leaving the swamps of Jacksonville, and we are gonna be heading up north. The New England Patriots hosting the Indianapolis Colts in this one. Sam Ehlinger and the Colts, the new signal caller there in Indianapolis. Is it Mac Jones? Probably should be Bailey Zappi. I think either way, Bill Belichick. We're going to chalk this one up to a Bill Belichick and the defense win here. Give me the Patriots at home.
A low-scoring affair, but it's going to be the New England Patriots at home over the Indianapolis Colts. I'm right on board with you. Getting close to the end of the morning slate. Buffalo, they're leaving upstate New York and headed over to East Rutherford to take on the New York Jets. I've been chanting J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets the last few weeks. But man, Zach Wilson hasn't looked good. Things haven't looked as sharp as they have in past weeks. Jets aren't there anymore, and they're playing the Buffalo Bills, the best team in football. Give me the Bills and a rout over the Jets. Just clearly solidifying that, yes, they are still the beast in the AFC East. Give me the Bills.
Yeah, Bills in this one, Mitch. You know, the Breece Hall injury is just really going to hurt the Jets this year. I mean, he was electric. He was a playmaker in a different way. And not having that guy is gonna hurt. And would certainly have helped against Buffalo, but I mean, even with him, I think this is just a tough shot for the Jets right now. Who, I mean, at 5-3 are exceeding all expectations. This is fantastic. So a loss against Buffalo doesn't hurt you on the season. And I think this Jets defense, they've played pretty good the last couple weeks. Maybe they keep this thing close. Maybe they keep themselves in it a little bit towards the back half. Maybe it's not quite a blowout. That would probably be the best case scenario, I guess, for the Jets outside of a win. But both rolling with Buffalo here. Easy call. Last morning game, Mitch, Minnesota Vikings, newly acquired tight end T.J. Hockenson headed to the nation's capital to take on the Commanders. I'm rolling with Washington in this one, Mitch. I'm rolling with Taylor Heinicke. The Commanders are 4-4 on the season. And they've they've kind of been up and down, but they seem to just pull out some scrappy, weird wins. And this one at home against the Vikings, kind of feel like it's going to be one of those weird ones. Give me Washington.
I get the sentiment there. I'm just not going to buy into it. I'm going to take the Vikings on the road in Washington to get that one done. Afternoon slate down on two games only in the afternoon slate, yeah. Actually. Seattle, they're leaving the Emerald City of the Pacific Northwest to head down to the desert to take on the Arizona Cardinals. Give me the Seahawks. They're rolling right now. Like they've looked pretty good. Top of the NFC West. Why not continue to roll with the Seahawks? Give me Geno Smith and the Hawks.
Yeah, Seattle's 5-3, as you mentioned, leaders of the NFC West. They beat the Cardinals 3 weeks ago, 19-9, to begin their current three-game win streak. But Mitch, in Arizona, I think that's where the win streak ends. I'm rolling with the Cardinals in this one. You saw a big difference last week, Mitch. You saw what DeAndre Hopkins can do for you. D-Hop back, and he has been... he's been pretty good for Arizona, and it was huge, huge last week. A loss to the Vikings, but 12 receptions, 159 yards, and a touchdown for D-Hop. Kyler Murray is so thankful he is back, and I think that makes a big difference for them. Close game, but I'm going Arizona at home in that one. Mitch, the Los Angeles Rams, defending Super Bowl champs, headed to Tampa Bay to take on recently announced, soon to be divorcee Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is a weird one, Mitch. I didn't know who the hell to pick in this one. Rams are 3-4. They're having a disappointing season. Tampa Bay's 3-5. They're having a disappointing season. Both offenses look ass right now. I went with the Rams. I don't know. I probably should have took Tampa Bay, but I went with LA. Like, I don't know. It's a weird one. I don't want to take either.
It's a really weird one. I mean, we have to keep in mind Cooper Kupp day to day right now with the ankle. I think it's that he's dealing with. So, like he may or may not be a go for Sunday afternoon. I'm confident that he will play. So for that reason alone, and how embarrassing the Tampa Bay offense has been over the last 4 weeks, 5 weeks, the entire of the season, give me the Rams over Tampa Bay. On the road. Down Sunday Night Football, the Tennessee Titans, they're leaving Music City to head over to Kansas City, Arrowhead Stadium, to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs, newly added wide receiver, Kadarius Toney. We'll see how much he plays a role in that offense. But this offense is rolling with or without him, because they had some good things going before he got there. Give me Kansas City over Tennessee at home. Going to be a really tough game for Tennessee to do anything, I think.
Yeah, Titans 5-2 to start the season. They're doing it again, right? We saw this last year. They were the number one seed in the AFC at 12-5 last year because they just kept winning games. And even though they weren't good and they had injuries, like they just kept doing it. They did it last week. Malik Willis gets his first start as a quarterback. He attempts 8 passes. They just ride Derrick Henry all game to a win, and it works. It worked last week, but Kansas City is a whole other level. Right, I mean, Kansas City is a legitimate team, and you're going to have to be able to go blow for blow, and the Titans just simply cannot do that at this point. So Kansas City gets the win at home on Sunday Night Football. Pretty easy one, I think, for the Chiefs. And that brings us, Mitch, to the final game, Monday Night Football. Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens headed down to the Big Easy, the Nolens, to take on Andy Dalton and the New Orleans Saints. Mitch, I'm rolling with the Ravens in this one on the road. 5-3 on the season for Baltimore, and it's been an up and down one as they've dealt with injuries and whatnot. But the Saints have had an even more up and down season, honestly. And with all that talent on the team, New Orleans has been one of the toughest teams to figure out this year. What are they? How good are they? Would it shock me if they won by 10 points on Monday night against Baltimore? No, it wouldn't, because this team's so weird. But I am going to roll with the Ravens in this one.
Andy Dalton throws for 350. Michael Thomas has 2 touchdowns. Alvin Kamara goes for 150 and a tutty. That's all a lie. None of that's happening. It's Baltimore in an easy one. It's Baltimore an easy one. Yeah, give me the Ravens over the Saints.
They had me in the first half, I'm not gonna lie. Where was the Taysom Hill 3 touchdowns though? That's what I needed, you know.
It's the fucking once in a fucking lifetime game. Oh my god. I can't believe, when the hell are you gonna learn anything about Taysom Hill? When are you gonna learn? I don't understand.
What do you mean? I just you know, you're
no, he does like one or two games and all of a sudden he's gone. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, they just like bring him out every three games. Like, hey Taysom, go do shit. He's like, All right. Thanks for
it's
that.
Silly. It's so weird.
Is Jameis going to be back? Who knows? Honestly, Dalton's played pretty good.
He's been good.
He's been lighting it up last couple of weeks. So, all right, Mitch, that's going to do it for our picks. That's going to do it for the podcast. Guys, we appreciate you sticking around, listening, as always, as you do. We really do appreciate it. Jam-packed show. And we love to do it. If you don't already, follow the socials. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok is at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Dallin Graff. Check out the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only place that you can become a permanent part of the conversation. Get on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys, leave a voice message, and we will play it live right here on the show and answer it for you. Who do you think should be the next entrant entrant into the boys club? Who do you got? Who do you want to see in there? You know, whatever questions you have, whatever suggestions you have, whatever statements you want to be made, even if you just want to be heard and get something off your chest, go on Anchor, leave us a message. We'll play it live right here on the show. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you look us up, you will find the Sports Hour. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Tell us that we suck, because, Dallin, that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better, and we would really like to do that. So please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Mitch, great pod. Great pod, my friend. Great stuff. Fun to be here, as always. Look forward to the conclusion of the World Series this weekend. More fun next week. College football, the season's wrapping up. I mean, first week of the college football playoff rankings. It's a fun time of year, and more to come on the podcast, as always. So until next time, we love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.